Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the Western Plains Cultural Centre podcast series, and today we're discussing the Archibald Prize. Okay, joining me today are Jessica, our collections officer.
Good afternoon.
Kent, our curator.
Hello.
And Andrew, our manager.
Hi.
Jess, we'll start with you, as we seem to. The Archibald Prize is etched into the history and psyche of 20th century Australian art. How and why has the prize managed to not only survive, but to flourish over a period of 90 years?
I think first and foremost because it's a portraiture prize. I think that the celebration of particular identities at different points in our kind of history, it gives something for people to relate to on a really personal level, but also it provides a touchstone for who we value in our culture at a particular time. So it's important not just as an artistic expression of the state of arts in Australia, but also in terms of who we go to as being citizens that we respect and we respond to and we feel should be sort of put into a portrait. So I think the very fact that it's a portrait prize is probably its key factor. But the other reason I think it is because it's controversial, because it challenges our notion of what a painting is and what a portrait is, and it encourages debate. And I think anything that encourages debate between people who are from an arts background and people who are not from an arts background means that it will have a greater relevance to the community at large.
And you think that it's still legitimate today, Jess?
Oh, of course, I think it is. I think, a lot of people might put the Archibald down for being a populist show, but if it gets people into galleries, it gets them thinking and talking about art, that's a really important thing. But also because it draws our attention to new generations of artists, and it encourages younger artists to be confident and to be bold and to kind of put themselves out there. And I think an art industry, an art world, needs to encourage that boldness.
All right, Andrew, the Archibald Prize has often been held to ridicule by the critics, but always generates huge audience interest. Why do you think public opinion continues to support this prize and even give it sort of ever-increasing attention every year?
Look, I think all the things that Jessica mentioned about it's very easy to get into a portrait, because at the very base level, you can do something with a portrait that you can't do perhaps with an abstract. Like, you can look at an abstract, and for those, as Jessica said, who aren't art trained, and you think, I don't know what it is that I'm meant to get from this. It's very difficult for me to get into. I might have an emotional reaction to it, or I might not. The painter may not even have wanted emotional. He may have wanted an intellectual or an academic reaction to it. But at least in a portrait, you can say, do I recognise the person? Do I feel something about them? So in that sense, it's a really easy thing for people to connect with. Why critics disparage it and have a bit of a go at it, I'm not sure. Maybe it's because it's the only time they'll also get onto the front page of the newspaper, because, it's almost like if you like the Archibald, it's sort of it means that you're not proper. That's not true of all things, because like any competition, in amongst the dross or buckets of vomit, as I described them a couple of days ago, there's going to be gems, there's going to be pearls that you can pick out from the bits of carrot. And I think that's important. But a really interesting thing, which is sort of connected to this question, is that conversation is odd in that it hasn't changed. And I don't know if we want to come back to that later on, but it's like, is the Archibald successful in generating discussions about art when every year it's the same bloody discussion? It's like we aren't actually moving forward. It's not like, okay, we've now moved on from the fact that it doesn't have to look like someone, okay? Let's look at, a very sort of specific controversy. It's always like, oh, that one doesn't look like that person. And, this is always backed up by the fact that, the Packing Room Prize or the general public, the People's Choice, tends to go to ones that look very like the person that they're meant to look like. So it's interesting that discussion takes place, but it's like Groundhog Day. Every year it comes back and they have exactly the same discussion with exactly the same outrage and exactly the same packer and probably the same pair of overalls saying, oh, I don't know what half of these bits of things are. Oh, I like this one over here. He's a good-looking bloke, that sort of thing. So that's what interests me about it, is that sort of this recurring theme.
But I think one of the strengths of the Archibald is probably actually that for all of its controversies and all of its shocks, it's actually a very traditional exhibition, traditional process.
It's paint.
Exactly. And what it's actually doing, I think, on a very subtle level is encouraging people's education about art and maturity about art in a really subtle way, so that it may not feel like it's changing. But for an art prize over 90 years old, if you look at the various stages of it, you can actually see how it's showing you how the art kind of audience in Australia is slowly but surely diversifying and maturing, so that it's actually, it's one of its strengths is probably that it's not leaping too far ahead into the future, having too many works that are way out there. It's that blend of the more contemporary with the more traditional that encourages people to feel comfortable with what they know, but also start to explore things that they may not have experienced before.
But I think I take that on board, but I think that education is very one way.
Mm.
I think if you look at the Critics' Choice, the actual winner of the Archibald, yeah, you can see it is, in a sense, a potted history of contemporary art. You get all sorts of things coming up for the first time in our year, and each one opens the gate to go sort of further out. Whereas I think if you lined up the People's Choice, it might be a very much a monochrome sort of thing. Now, not always. There might be someone that, you know, they really spring on because, as you said, it's a person that they know and they admire, and it becomes confused with that.
Yeah.
But I often, when I look at it, I often see that there's a divergence.
Mm.
Like the critics are moving further and further away, and it's becoming very open. Mm. And the people are just like, you know, hang on, none shall pass.
Perhaps as the critics become more and more divergent, the desire to hold on to the recognisable and the traditional will become even stronger.
Touching on a point that Jessica raised in connection to contemporary art, Kent, can you tell us about what place the Archibald has in the world of contemporary art?
I think that it is invariably an important part of the Archibald Prize. I think that anyone making art now is working within a contemporary context, and it's probably more about representation versus non-representation more than anything. I think that the notion of contemporary art is a confused kind of concept, but in the end, you know, anyone sort of working currently is a contemporary artist. And I think that the audience is certainly becoming a lot more used to a variety of kinds of paintings. And the fact that the People's Choice often tends to be a more representational painting, I think, is the result of it being safe, in a sense. I think that people are much more inclined to go with something that they feel comfortable with. But in saying that, I think that a lot of, I mean, I've been really surprised at the amount of interest in Juan Ford's portrait, for instance, which may or may not have something to do with the Juan Ford show that we showed last year, but people are really open to at least analysing or talking about the kind of different portraits that are in there. And that, I think, is a really great thing. I think that the difference between I like that, I don't like that, there's a lot more in that middle ground that I think people have conversations about. You know, in terms of the diversity, you know, it's probably more apt to say, you know, I like that one a little bit, I like that one a little bit more, I like that one a little bit more, and I love that one. So, you know, whilst ever we have a competitions type sort of situation, you invariably get these right, wrong, yes, no kind of responses. So I think that it's interesting that the paintings in the show are, you know, the artists are pushing the envelope. They are sort of playing around with representation. They're playing around with notions of portraiture, which I think, you know, it needs that. I think if they were straight portraits that were painted in a very traditional style, I don't think anyone would care about the show, in a sense. I think that it would not be nearly as popular. I don't think it'd be publicised nearly as much. Certainly if you look at the history of the Archibald Prize, the sort of first 15 years, it was a very strict representational kind of show. And as a result, you had artists who won it for 10 years in a row until the early 50s, when younger artists were kind of protesting and saying, no, we need to stop this show from being stuffy.
And it's ironic that actually the works from the history of the Archibald that have stuck with us in terms of our cultural memory are the ones who've pushed against. It's not the portraits of the very brown portraits of the first 20 years of the same sort of pose over and over. It's the Dobell, it's the Whiteley, it's the Craig Ruddy's, it's those works that actually shocked us or challenged us a bit. Mm. They're the ones that have that we remember and that we that visitors go to and, you know, that have a prominence in our cultural history.
And I think we do see the Archibald as a reflection of ourselves. I think that if it was a if in those early days a kind of stuffy brown show, it doesn't surprise me that people were saying, well, hang on a minute, we're more than that. We're as a country, as, you know, a society with so many aspects to it and so many kind of people working in interesting areas. I think we demand that it tell us more about ourselves, that we form views of ourselves that are not the norm, that that reflects the kind of diversity of our culture, etc. So I think all of those things make it a success because it's not a sort of staid, run-of-the-mill kind of show, because we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if it was.
Pretty interesting, just thinking about even the materials and techniques that they're using today. Can you give us an idea of some of the quite unusual ones?
Absolutely. I think that the show this year is not only interesting in terms of the fact that, you know, 20 of the 41 artists are being shown for the first time, and I think that that is quite a statement in itself, that at least half of the artists have never been shown. So it proves that the show has a life and it's evolving. And it not always, but it often is quite interesting to look at the show from a material perspective. Most years there is a conglomerate of painters who use a lot of paint. And so there's paintings in there that have got very thick layers of paint and they're kind of sculptural. And then you have other artists who are kind of harking back to older techniques. For instance, there's a portrait of one of the soldiers, which has been made using pigment mixed with a rabbit skin glue and mixed with charcoal as well. So using quite an old technique to depict, in that particular instance, a soldier who by law is not able to be depicted. So it's actually a composite of a number of different people. So materially, that's a really interesting portrait, but also conceptually, because it's kind of fighting against a kind of rule that you can't depict a person, but still wanting to create a portrait. Leslie Rice has got a really wonderful work in that show, which is a portrait painted onto black velvet, and it's acrylic paint onto black velvet. Something that usually we kind of would think of sad clowns or something a bit kitsch and cliche. Whereas Leslie has used that in a really evocative way. I mean, the work, whilst it sort of has this synthetic material and acrylic paint, it harks back to, you know, a strong tradition of painting, of portraiture. In the most part, portraits, certainly in the past, were of noble people and rich people, etc. Whereas Leslie's portrait is actually from a tattooed man. And it has a carnivalesque kind of circus feel about it. So he's chosen, you know, basically a figure who is on the edges of society and someone who in the past would not have been deemed appropriate to have a portrait painted. So it's a lot of ideas and materials being used by these artists.
Okay. Well, to finish off, is there anything else anyone wants to say about the prize before we finish?
Well, it's here until the beginning of December, I think December 2nd. Mm. It's incredibly large for a start.
Mm.
And I think it's, regardless of our sort of feelings towards whether or not it's pushing dialogue much further than anywhere else, I certainly think it's a higher standard than it's been for the last couple of years.
Mm. Yeah.
And that may be because you do have so many people who are there for the first time.
Feels fresh.
And, so it's a really interesting show.
Okay.
I think number one as well, that people often complain about, oh, you know, the paintings are so big, etc. But I think most people, certainly myself, I think there's something quite exciting about walking into a gallery with, you know, these huge paintings that kind of tower over us. I think that's quite an experience. And it's probably not something that we're so used to. Certainly in Europe, you get these massive paintings that you sort of walk into these big old galleries and feel that they engulf you. I think there's something quite interesting about large paintings, sort of...
the drama of it.
The drama of it. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. All right, we might finish up by just talking about our own favourites, I suppose, considering there's a People's Choice Award. Can you name a favourite?
My favourite, it tends to change every time I go in there, but consistently has been one of the first works you see when you walk in, a work by Marcus Callum. It's a very quiet, controlled, austere painting, but I like the fact that it is difficult to read the emotions of the subject matter. He seems very, despite it being a self-portrait by the artist, it feels very distant from us as a viewer, that he's holding something back. And I think that's a really interesting idea of an artist choosing to paint themselves and yet not keeping himself quite hidden still. So that's probably my favourite work.
Want to be, I'm very bad with names. Stuart Waddell?
Craig Waddell.
It's one of the ones that Kent mentioned earlier that has used a lot of paint. Mm-hmm. It's extremely distorted and somewhat abstract in it, but it's got a fabulous concept that he's painting himself as he thinks his wife sees him. Mm-hmm. And his wife obviously sees him as a monster. But there's a lot of pain and emotion. And Justin, I like it because it's almost like a drawing to me. Mm. It's that very simple thing that with just a few gestures of paint on surface, there's just so much going on.
It varies a lot.
Yeah.
Well, mine would be one Fawn, which is probably what you're going to say, Kent. But I suppose the placement of it where you've put it, the impact that it has when you walk into the room and the lighting on it is incredible, and it really stands out amongst the rest just for its sharpness and clarity and how crisp. The fact that he's able to manipulate paint to achieve that level of realism is really quite astounding, especially in terms of the fabric folds and things like that. So I'd say it's the most impressive.
Mm. With that, Kent or Jessica, can he do double duty? Because he could put that in the Blake Prize. It would be appropriate. Is he allowed to?
Yeah, that's his call.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. But the Blake Prize could probably see this.
Depending upon the Blake Prize, he might have date conditions.
There
quite often
rules, mate.
You have to have painted it within a certain period of time beforehand.
They may not allow it to be something that's been exhibited before. Mm. Depends.
Yeah. Yeah, but in terms of context and content, and I think it's applicable to both prizes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me at the moment, my favourite is a work that I actually can't remember the artist's name, but it's actually the smallest work in the show.
Natasha Bianik, I think.
Yeah, Natasha Bianik. Thanks, Jess. It's a gorgeous tiny little oil painting on metal, and it's a self-portrait. I think it's really beautiful. It's called fluoroscuro, which is a reference to chiaroscuro, which is a technique of depicting light and shadow, usually by candlelight. But the artist has sort of updated that, and it's light and shadow, and the source of light being a fluorescent light. And there's little touches in the painting. There's what looked like a couple of cords from a computer or headphones or something. So it's a painting that harks very much back to particular time in history, but she's updated it very well, and I think it's an exquisite painting.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.